I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We need look no further than the horror show in Gaza, with a level of death and destruction without parallel in recent times. Malnourishment is soaring, starvation is knocking on every door.
Starvation is knocking on every door in Gaza. Those are the words of the UN Secretary General. As many tons of life-saving food, water, medical supplies sit untouched in warehouses near Gaza, but denied entry by Israel. We'll speak with the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, Michael Fakhry. And as the situation in Gaza continues to grow more desperate, we'll be joined by a Palestinian-American student at Virginia Commonwealth University. The school is withholding her diploma because of her student activism.
VCU wants me to choose silence over justice and comfort over courage and a diploma over my people. I have lost over 200 family members in this ongoing genocide just in the last year and a half.
We'll speak to the student, Serene Haddad, and her father, Dr. Tariq Haddad. Last year, he refused to meet with Secretary of State Blinken over the U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Then we look at the cancellation of Stephen Colbert's late-night show on Paramount CBS. The longtime comedian and Trump critic was canceled just days after he criticized Paramount's settlement of a lawsuit with President Trump.
Unlike the payoffs from ABC and Twitter, Paramount's settlement did not include an apology. Instead, that's good. Instead, the corporation released a statement where they said, "You may take our money, but you will never take our dignity. You may, however, purchase our dignity for the low, low price of $16 million. We need the cash."
We'll speak with media critic Jeff Cohen. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. More than 100 humanitarian organizations are demanding action to end Israel's siege on Gaza, warning mass starvation is spreading across the Palestinian territory. The NGOs, including Amnesty International, Oxfam, Doctors Without Borders, warn, quote, illnesses like acute watery diarrhea are spreading. Markets are empty, waste is piling up, and adults are collapsing on the streets from hunger and dehydration. Unquote. Their warning came as the Palestinian Ministry of Health said the number of starvation-related deaths in Gaza has climbed to at least 111 people. This is Ghada Al-Fayoumi, a displaced Palestinian mother of seven in Gaza City.
My children wake up sick every day. What do? I get a saline solution for them. What can I do? There's no food, no bread, no drinks, no rice, no sugar, no cooking oil, no bulgur, nothing. There's no kind of any food available to us at all.
Meanwhile, health officials in Gaza say Israeli attacks over the past day killed more than 70 people, including five more people seeking food at militarized aid sites. The World Health Organization's released video showing attacks on its facilities in central Gaza's Deir al-Balah. A WHO spokesperson condemned the attack in the strongest terms and called for the immediate release of a staff member abducted by Israeli forces.
Male staff and family members were handcuffed, stripped, interrogated on the spot, and screened at gunpoint. Two WHO staff and two family members were detained.
In Tel Aviv, thousands of anti-war protesters marched on Israel's military headquarters Tuesday, demanding an end to Israel's war and a lifting of the Gaza siege. This is Israeli peace activist Uri Weltman.
International agencies are warning that there is a growing famine inside the Gaza Strip as a result of the tightening of the siege, and people are literally starving. We came here today to call out to end this siege, to allow the entry of humanitarian aid, and to end the war on Gaza, which is a catastrophe for both Palestinians as well as Israelis.
Here in New York, hundreds of protesters rallied in Manhattan's Union Square Tuesday to demand an end to Israel's war on Gaza. Separately, protesters rallied outside the United Nations, demanding UN leaders take stronger action to end Israel's siege. Meanwhile, Columbia University informed nearly 80 students that they'd been suspended for 1 to 3 years or expelled. The university sent the notices to students who participated in a May teach-in about Palestine in honor of the writer and freedom fighter Bassel al-Arraj, who was assassinated by Israel in 2017. Separately, Palestinian activist and Columbia University graduate Mahmoud Khalil met with lawmakers on Capitol Hill Tuesday, demanding an end to U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza.
To be honest, I feel that this is my duty to continue advocating for Palestinians. This is what the Trump administration tried to do. They tried to silence me, but I'm here to say that we will continue to resist. We are not backing down, and I will continue the work that I've been doing, which is advocating for the rights of Palestinians.
Among others, Mahmoud Khalil met with independent Senator Bernie Sanders. President Trump's warning the U.S. could attack Iran's nuclear facilities again after striking 3 nuclear sites in June. NBC News is reporting only one of the sites was badly damaged, but that the other 2 facilities could restart uranium enrichment within months. Iran's foreign minister has said Iran cannot give up on nuclear enrichment. Inside Iran, a series of mysterious fires and explosions have been reported on a daily basis. Officials suspect a coordinated sabotage campaign. Meanwhile, Amnesty International is calling for an investigation into Israel's deliberate targeting of Evin prison last month, saying that strikes must be investigated as war crimes. Syria's government's evacuating Bedouin families who remain trapped in the city of Suweida as a fragile ceasefire continues to hold between Druze and Bedouin fighters. Violence between the groups that erupted last week has displaced at least 93,000 people. Bedouin survivors say Druze fighters went door-to-door attacking entire families.
We were still alive, sitting by the wall to hide from bullets. 2 armed men came in and killed them all.
Who did they kill?
My brother, his wife, both of his kids, 8 and 6 years old. And my wife, my mother, my sister, and my daughter were injured.
A delegation of Russian diplomats has departed from Moscow for a 3rd round of peace talks with Ukraine and Istanbul, Turkey. Both Kyiv and Moscow rejected one another's demands ahead of the negotiations as Russia continues drone and missile attacks, including another overnight barrage that injured 12 people across Ukraine. Meanwhile, protests erupted in Kyiv Tuesday as President Volodymyr Zelensky signed a bill weakening the independence of Ukraine's anti-corruption agencies, which were set up after the Maidan Revolution protests of 2014. This is 18-year-old protester Vladislava Kirstelik.
I lived under Russian occupation. I know what it means for one person to have all the power, when nothing is transparent and everything is working against you. That's why this hurts. I don't want it to be the same for us here.
President Trump's announced a trade deal with Japan after months of negotiations. Japan agreed to open up its economy to more U.S. imports and invest $550 billion in the U.S. As part of the deal, the U.S. will lower its tariffs on Tokyo from 25% to 15%. The deal was reached just days after the Japanese prime minister's ruling coalition suffered an electoral setback, losing control of the upper house. Prime Minister Ishibe is denying reports reports he'll soon resign. The election also saw the far-right populist Japanese First Party surge in popularity, winning 14 seats, up from just one. President Trump announced a trade deal with the Philippines on Tuesday after meeting with the country's president, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., at the White House. Under the deal, the U.S. will impose a 19% tariff on all imports from the Philippines. Marcos also met with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth at the Pentagon to discuss expanding military ties between the U.S. and the Philippines. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Mike Johnson is adjourning the House of Representatives for their summer recess a day early, thwarting Democratic-led efforts to force Republicans into voting on the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. This comes after Democratic Senator Dick Durbin said an FBI source revealed that in March, about 1,000 FBI agents were instructed to review some 100,000 Epstein-related records and to flag any related that also mention the president, Trump. On Tuesday, Trump's Justice Department said Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche will soon meet with Jeffrey Epstein's former girlfriend and co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. She's currently serving a 20-year prison sentence for helping Epstein groom, recruit, and abuse underage girls. Blanche was President Trump's private defense lawyer before his appointment to the Department of Justice. Meanwhile, CNN has published newly discovered photos confirming for the first time Epstein attended Trump's wedding to his second wife, Marla Maples, in 1993. CNN also published video showing Trump and Epstein together at a Victoria's Secret fashion show in 1999, as well as other photos. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard says she's submitted a criminal referral to the Department of Justice seeking to bring charges against Barack Obama, claiming the former president led a, quote, treasonous conspiracy to mislead the public on Russia's role in the 2016 election. Her wild accusations came as Trump posted an AI-generated video depicting Obama's arrest in the Oval Office by federal agents. In a lengthy rant to reporters in the Oval Office Tuesday, Trump repeatedly claimed without evidence that Obama had committed treason, a crime punishable by death in the United States.
This is like proof, irrefutable proof, that Obama was seditious, that Obama was trying to lead a coup.
In a statement, former President Barack Obama condemned President Trump's allegations as bizarre and a, quote, weak attempt at distraction, unquote. Here in New York, family and community members gathered Tuesday for a wake to commemorate Saniya Cheatham, an 18-year-old black woman from the Bronx who died in police custody earlier this month. City medical examiners ruled the teen's death a suicide, but her family continues to demand justice and answers into what led to her death after she was found hanging in a holding cell at an NYPD precinct on July 5th. The family's being represented by civil rights attorney Ben Crump. Two videos released by New York immigration rights advocates Tuesday are offering a first glimpse into the inhumane conditions faced by immigrants held in ICE's shadowy detention facility on the 10th floor of 26 Federal Plaza. Dozens of immigrants have spent days or even weeks confined to overcrowded cells there without access to showers, medication, or a change of clothes, forced to sleep on the concrete floor, left hungry and without contact with the outside world. The videos show around two dozen men, many sprawled on the floor of a fluorescent-lit room, lying on or covered by thin aluminum blankets, separated from two toilets by a wall that offers no privacy. The unidentified man recording the video sneaked in his cell phone. He's heard saying in Spanish, quote, "They have us like dogs in here. The American dream. They haven't given us food. They haven't given us medicine. We're cold. There are people who've been here for 10, 15 days inside. We're just waiting," he says. Those detained at the facility are among the hundreds of people who've been arrested and disappeared by ICE agents after attending their immigration hearings. DHS has repeatedly blocked New York Democratic Congress members from inspecting the facility and has falsely claimed immigrants are only held there briefly. The videos were obtained by the New York Immigration Coalition through New York Assemblywoman Catalina Cruz. And in Chicago, a tenants union is continuing its rent strike as they fight their evictions. The Belden Sawyer Tenant Association in May sued landlord Drew Millard and property management company 33 Realty, which earlier this year sought to turn the tenants' apartments into luxury properties, refusing to renew existing leases and retaliating against tenants who say the landlords ignored serious maintenance and other housing issues in order to push them out of their homes. This is one of the rent strike leaders.
My name is Anaí Herrera. We've been on a rent strike for 4 months because they want to evict us from the building. We have been victim of harassment and discrimination for being Mexicans. There have been threats. We even have people coming to knock on our doors, sometimes armed. And there are kids here. That's why we're suing Andrew Millard and his company, 33 Realty.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The destruction of Palestine is breaking the world. That's the headline of a new piece in The Guardian by the scholar Mustafa Bayoumi. It opens with a description of our first guest today. Quote, Serene Haddad is a bright young woman. At 20 years old, she just finished a four-year degree in psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University, VCU, in only 3 years, earning the highest honors along the way. Yet despite her accomplishments, she still can't graduate. Her diploma is being withheld by the university, not because I didn't complete the requirements, she told me, Bayoumi writes, but because I stood up for Palestinian life. Unquote. In May, VCU announced Serene would not receive her diploma because of her participation in a peaceful memorial this past April that commemorated the violent police arrests at their student encampment for Palestine the previous April in 2024. Police told the roughly 50 students they were trespassing and breaking campus policy when they refused to move to a designated area for free speech. Serene was an active member of the VCU chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine. She's a Palestinian American who's lost more than 200 members of her extended family in Israel's war on Gaza. The group's actions have been repeatedly targeted and repressed by the VCU administration, including banning the use of sidewalk chalk to write messages on campus. The Muslim Public Affairs Council and others have called on VCU to immediately release the degrees of Serene and another student. Serene's father is Palestinian-American Dr. Tariq Haddad, a cardiologist and a member of the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights. He grew up in Gaza. Last year, he refused to meet with then-Secretary of State Antony Blinken over the Biden administration's support of Israel's assault on Gaza. We spoke to him about that on Democracy Now! In February. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, yesterday, Serene had a hearing before the VCU Student Conduct Board to determine whether she'll receive her diploma. She and her father join us now from Falls Church, Virginia. Dr. Tariq Haddad is a cardiologist and a member of the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights. And Serene Haddad just came from her hearing at Virginia Commonwealth University. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! First, the last time we spoke with you, Dr. Tariq Haddad, you lost more than 100 members of your family. That was just months ago, a half a year ago. That number is now doubled to over 200. Our condolences to both of you. Also,
thank you. It's
go ahead.
It's been a nightmare. Sorry. I apologize. Go ahead.
And also our condolences on the death of your dad in the United States just a few weeks ago, and your grandfather, Serene.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
You've both been through an enormous amount. Serene, as you were having your hearing yesterday at Virginia Commonwealth, you're the star student in psychology, supposed to be graduating in 3 years. All the figures were coming out of Gaza, the numbers of 1,000 killed by Israeli forces since May, 1,000 Palestinians, and something like 100 Palestinians starving to death. And I'm wondering your thoughts first on what happened yesterday and what you told the board who's investigating you.
I think that in general, a lot of the VCU policies were created and fabricated in response to the Palestinian protests. I think that the policies that are made, they're not about policy, it's not about procedure, it's about repression, and it's very clear, specifically when, in response to the SJPs every single Wednesday, we would use sidewalk chalk to chalk messages like Free Palestine or VCU is complicit in genocide. VCU then responded months later by banning the use of sidewalk chalk in many areas across the campus, and one of the only areas they allow sidewalk chalk is actually this small area that's hidden in near three different dumpsters. So I think that the way the hearing went yesterday, we're going to find out what the decision that VCU makes and what the Student Conduct Board ends up making. I advocated and I pled my case. Thankfully, I had representation from Palestine Legal, and I had a great support system. There was an action letter that went out that had over 5,400 signatures on it. And I think at the end of the day, whatever VCU decides, I have made peace with the fact that I don't need a university who is materially invested in a genocide's approval about whether I deserve my degree or not. And I think that I can understand that I am on the right side of history, and I don't need a university to tell me that.
But you did go to school and paid for that schooling for 3 years. Dr. Haddad, how did you feel when you heard your daughter, who'd worked so hard through her college career, was not going to get her diploma? And did this mean you didn't get to walk this year?
So I did get to walk across the stage. I just didn't get a diploma, although everyone else did. And I walked on May 10th, and I received the notice that I wasn't going to be getting my diploma and degree on May 7th, so just 3 days prior to my graduation.
Dr. Haddad, how did you feel?
So I think mixed emotions. What I would say is, obviously, no parent wants to see their child having their degree inappropriately withheld. But I was also very proud. And what I mean by that is I've always, every parent wants their children to care about something more than themselves, to advocate for something more than themselves, to believe in the goodness of people, and to try to do what you can to make the world around them better. And there's no better example of that than advocating for the rights of oppressed Palestinians for the past 75 years. Since they were children, we've always advocated for that. You care about something more than yourself, help make the world a better place, and just have an impact on people. And she's shown that, and she's made us incredibly proud. The fact that she has integrity, that she's not just being silent and doing what's necessarily best for her, but doing what's best for all of her family in Gaza, who are starving, who are dying, who are malnourished. And it just shows the utter humanity that my daughter has.
Dr. Haddad, in fact, what are you hearing from your family back in Gaza? You grew up there. Talk about, 200 members of your extended family. Talk about some of their stories that you have lost.
Most people, they have photo albums of their living relatives. The sad reality is I have a photo album of all my dead relatives, and it doesn't even fit a full photo album. It's as you said, it's over 200 family members on both sides of my family. My mother's family is mostly from Khan Yunis, and my father's is from Gaza City, and so they've had it on both ends. Early on, some of the stories that come to mind, one of my relatives died on her was killed on her wedding day. I've had, entire generations of family, the grandparents, the parents, the children, all killed, 18 in one military strike. I've had a relative who was killed, a cousin who was killed while she was pregnant. That was early on, but this has continued. It's not stopped. Last summer, August 11th, one of my cousin's children Abdullah al-Farra was killed literally trying to get bread for his family. He was just walking down the street trying to get bread for his starving family. And the last picture, you know, we saw the family. Sorry, it's a little emotional.
He was 14 years old.
14 years old, and he was top of his class. Last pictures of him strewn on the side of the road, killed by an Israeli military strike with five bags of bread in his hand, which, are, you know, you can't even get now. But that's what he was doing. He was getting bread. That was his crime, to get bread for his starving family. You know, I've had, I mean, the stories go on and on. I had a relative, Muhammad al-Farra, who's a special needs adult. You know, military footage that was actually provided by on an Israeli media station, Channel 12, showed the Israeli military striking him while he's walking, basically, you know, on his own near his home, near the rubble of his home. He just killed a special needs adult. I mean, it's gone on and on. Every day we hear news stories, and what's worse than the deaths, Amy, is all the suffering. It's unbelievable. It's a dystopian nightmare. I mean, I just heard from, you know, one of my relatives, Nail, yesterday, who said he's never seen anything like this. You see people on the street who fall onto the ground, not just from bullets, but from starvation. They get to the point of starvation, to the point where they literally fall on the ground. It's I'm just going to, you know, read you a quote that Nail just sent me, my cousin, yesterday, because it just tells you everything. He just sent this to me on WhatsApp yesterday. He said, what's happening in Gaza right now is beyond description and beyond comprehension. It's not just a passing tragedy, but an unprecedented humanitarian disaster in history. In Gaza, people are falling in the streets, not from bullets, but for the severity of the hunger, one after the other, like autumn leaves weighed down by despair. And if they don't die from hunger, a missile awaits them while they get food, or relentless bombing. There's no choice between life and death, because death alone is present. Gaza today bleeds in silence, and the world is content with merely watching. And then another one of my cousins, Salim, just sent me a message too. He said, it's a disgrace for all nations in the 21st century that someone should die from hunger while countries cannot even intervene to provide the basic necessities of life for people who have always loved life. So that's kind of an idea. Other things I've heard from my family, my cousin Hiba talked about her worst, you know, the worst stress that she has is having her son asking for food, and she has no food to give them. There's no flour, there's no vegetables, there's no proteins, there's no anything to provide them. They go 3 days without eating. All of them are emaciated. Every one of my relatives and cousins, you know, are massively underweight. You know, even trying to get food is an unbelievable tragedy. They have to make a decision about whether to walk on, you know, roads that are completely impassable, and then go to these aid stations where they could be sniped and shot down while they're getting food. And so it's a decision: do you starve to death, or do you go to these aid stations and get sniped by Israeli soldiers? It's just I can't even describe the level of lack of humanity that my family is going through every day. And you've seen that, I'm sure, on the news, Amy. I mean, over 1,000 people have been killed while trying to get food from these aid stations, and that's just in the past few months.
Dr. Haddad, you refused to meet with Tony Blinken at a roundtable discussion and sent him a letter talking about why, chronicling what had happened to your family. I'm wondering your thoughts about Trump today.
I think, you know, the problem that I've seen is that it's been more of the same. What we saw, just without even getting into politics, what we saw under Biden was President Biden was, you know, weapons and more weapons and bombs. And what we've seen under President Trump has been more of the same. It's just a complete disconnection from the reality of what voters want and what you know, Democratic voters want, what everybody wants. I mean, you see that in the polls. $12.5 billion in weapons provided just in the past 6 months, you know, toward specifically for military equipment, you know, that's being used on my family, being used on these people who are starving to death. And we're having trouble balancing our budget, and yet we have $12.5 billion to provide for bombs to kill innocent people. It's beyond comprehension. And we're not even talking about small weapons. We're talking about bunker buster bombs that destroy city blocks the size of Times Square. And, you know, what purpose do we have as a country? How is it consistent with our moral compass to be providing bunker buster bombs that destroy entire city blocks and kill, you know, at this point, over 18,000 children?